Welcome to the Payments Journal Podcast. And here is your host, Ryan Mack.
Welcome to the Payments Journal Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Mack. Now, APIs are not a new technology, but in this digital age, they are table stakes for many organizations within the payments ecosystem. But not all APIs are created equal, and the rails that they take to deliver the information plays a large factor in not only the security of that data, but the end customer experience. But the good news here is for developers is that they no longer need to have large capital to build out private connections to solve for that latency and security issues of using the public internet. So to dive deeper into this topic, I have Lance Homer, who is the Global Head of Digital Payments and Banking Ecosystem at Equinix, and Tim Sloan, who is the VP of Payments Innovation at Mercator Advisor Group. So there's certainly a lot of interesting insights to take away from today's episode. So without any further delays, let's start the show. So Lance and Tim, thank you so much for joining me on today's episode where we're taking a look at APIs and kind of really the future of APIs here. So Tim, perhaps maybe we could start with you here and maybe you could kind of give us a little bit of a market overview of some of the trends that you're seeing within the API space.
Yeah, sure, Ryan. Right, APIs is a huge market and it's they're being implemented across many different technology platforms. But if, as an example, you just kind of focus in on payment platforms and payment APIs, we see a growth rate of around 20% over the next 4 years as more payment platforms that were traditionally custom integrated are executing an API platform to better manage, control, and expand their capabilities for the larger market.
Excellent. Thank you so much for that overview there, Tim. Now, Lance, your organization was able to provide us with this really interesting graphic here, and I think it really kind of paints the picture of that APIs look like they're really the future of the industry, so to speak. So if that is true, what are the implications of that? And perhaps maybe you could also kind of unpack this graphic a little bit for our audience. And it's just a quick reminder for our audience, those of you who are following along on paymentsjournal.com, you're going to be able to view this chart in the article below. So Lance, if we could perhaps dive into that.
Sure. Well, thanks for having me on, Tim and Ryan. Yeah, this graphic really reinforces what Tim shared earlier, is that there is going to be dramatic growth in API connectivity across the payments and banking space in the next few years. Certainly we associate APIs with the terminology open banking, but I think really it would be better construed if we think about it as being more towards connected banking. It's not just about opening up your platforms to fintechs, but basically making sure that you can connect to your internal users, create a DevOps community, and as well as connect to fintechs out there. And as we see kind of this trend, what's driving this trend is the movement of money is really being commoditized. And we expect there to be value creation in the exchange of transactional data, information, and analytics around it. So really when that happens, why we're talking about this today is that there's going to be a growing number of endpoints that these banks are connecting to and fintechs are connecting to. Latency will become an increasingly important factor in this. And so where and how you connect really is going to make all the difference in how you deliver your APIs out to the ecosystem. So if you can think about how you want to deliver the things at the end, you can prepare today. And we've seen this been done in the ecosystems at Equinix before, particularly in the electronic trading space, where people understood that they needed to connect to a robust set of ecosystem participants and started deployments at Equinix to accomplish that. We expect the same things to happen here around open banking and the API ecosystem that surrounds it.
Yeah, the issue of performance, it's hard enough for financial institutions to control performance of all their back-end systems when there's access being given to the internet. I was talking to one financial institution where their MQ series middleware was brought to its knees simply because they hadn't thought through the use case they connected to, and the traffic was coming so fast and furious they couldn't keep up with it in their MQ series middleware. As you start to connect, not through middleware like that, but through the internet to multiple different partners, being able to manage the bandwidth and more importantly, the latency is really critical.
It absolutely is. I mean, if you could think about this as a digital supply chain that has timeouts in terms of being able to respond to messages, and you want the highest amount of customer satisfaction, you want to make sure that at every stop along the road where a partner or you or someone consuming your data is using it, that you eliminate as much latency between those connections so that their applications will not have any response timeouts. And I think your example of if someone having their middleware, you know, have issues with the robust amounts of requests going into it is certainly something we see across our 10,000 global customers who are connecting into Equinix to connect to their partners. And so it's something that we can help solve with if they're having those types of troubles.
Yeah, now clearly, you know, you're really kind of bringing up the point in that you're saying that it's really the how and where it is that you connect really does make all the difference. And I really want to get into why that is so important, because obviously one of the points you brought up was the low latency. But beyond that, why is it really so important about the where and the how you connect?
If you think about most of these fintechs that are out there, they're begun with a founder who is a computer programmer, and then they hire a bunch of DevOps guys, and they typically run this in the cloud. And so they have a kind of cloud-first mentality, and they may not think about infrastructure, network connectivity as much. And when things start to not work as well, there start to be latency or complaints about an application being slow. That's where it comes back to the where and how you connect makes all the difference. So if you think about, you've got all these different cloud availability zones, you may want to have your partners connect directly to you at the availability zone that's closest to them. And that may require you to have a point of presence inside a co-location facility like Equinix that can, where you might put your API gateway where you can accept API requests from those in that local zone. So you may begin your platform in the US, but want to expand to Europe. So by putting a point of presence inside of Equinix for your API gateway connecting to your cloud service provider in a London or Frankfurt or Amsterdam markets will certainly reduce the latency into those markets. You could do the same for Asia Pacific with Singapore, Hong Kong, Sydney, et cetera. But the other component to this of why it matters is there's the geographical element around making sure that you have comply with data residency and data sovereignty requirements. And so, you know, those are elements that people need to be thinking about up front. If I'm expanding my business, am I going to be subject to data sovereignty or data residency requirements? And how do I solve for that? And that may require you to keep your data in country outside of the cloud. It may require you to keep your keys in outside the cloud. And all of this comes back to the how your customers and partners are accessing your APIs and where that data is stored, because you don't want them to access the APIs in Singapore and then have it, you know, come back to the US for the data. So getting that end in mind, the beginning, figure out like, how can I separate my data across the globe to match these zones that line up with the cloud providers and where I'm doing business is key to start with up front.
Yeah, it's a whole new world, you know, to your point, Lance. People think about the cloud and how that's really helped applications be able to be more modular and to share resources over time. What few of them recognize is the networks have become exactly the same. Software-defined networks, the ability to create private virtual networks and high bandwidth connectivity is enabling you to move those apps in a Kubernetes-like environment just about any place you want them and move the database wherever you need it. So then it becomes just a real matter of sitting down, figuring out GDPR and all the other data restrictions you have, and figure out where you want those apps, where you want the data, and how to manage it from an infrastructure perspective, recognizing both your software as well as your networks are now capable of immediately adjusting to needs. You know, you don't have to worry about whether you have enough iron, whether you have enough bandwidth. Those two things can work together to adjust.
Now, the software part of my brain here, right, really kind of is boiling down some of this conversation and kind of going like, okay, well, if we're really looking at just getting data from point A to point B, then why couldn't you simply just use the public internet for this? So one, I'd like to get Lance, your response to that, but then also kind of really honing in on the why is the how you connect part of this conversation really so important?
That's an excellent question there, Ryan. And I think a lot of people don't ask that question of, you know, why not just the internet? You know, certainly the internet's being used for API connectivity currently for most of the fintech to bank applications. But as this, we're in the early days and there's not much volume and it's not a critical infrastructure for most people or most businesses out there. But as this grows in scale and banking as a service, payments as a service become more embedded into applications and into the functions of an enterprise, you're going to see a need to shift this off of the public internet onto private connectivity. And the reason for this is that you can control the latency between the endpoints, and you can also make sure you can control who gets on. With the public internet, you don't have anybody and their dog can access the internet, and so you're subject to people testing the robustness of your cybersecurity on your APIs. But with private network connectivity, you can, if you're partnering up between a bank and a fintech, you're expecting all that traffic to be just from that one partner across that connection. And we saw this really, you know, this shift from public internet to private interconnection grow. And that was the whole reason Equinix launched what we call the Global Interconnection Index, or GXI. It's a report that we release that measures the amount of private connectivity versus public internet connectivity. And we just released our fourth version. If you Google Equinix Global Interconnection Index, you can get a sense of how much growth there is on this private connectivity. And I really think that you'll see a shift in this to where the plumbing or the backbone of open banking will be done over private connectivity in the coming years and be less reliant on the public internet. And that will probably only be used for the end user applications for when they're using a PC or their phone. But that's, going back, these creating it, moving it to private connectivity is going to make sure that they can, increase end user performance with reduced latency and security, and be able to trace, who's connecting to them, and whether there's an outage, be able to trace, how to repair that. And that's really where it all comes together.
Yeah, you can go to the public internet and you can encrypt, but that's not going to stop a denial of service attack. If everybody can get to your system, to your access point, then you're going to have the bad guys going out and infecting hundreds of thousands of devices that can all focus in on your particular interconnected gateway. So putting it into a private environment allows you to lock those folks out. And then you can do the point-to-point encryption over that private network that you're now maintaining for that added level of security. It's just a smart thing to do, especially in financial services.
Absolutely. I mean, you're just talking traditional best practices for cybersecurity, making sure your data is encrypted, making sure your patches are applied. But you also want to make sure that you have as few as windows and doors that people can crawl through to get to the access to that information. And so moving your connectivity off the public internet into private connectivity really reduces the attack surface that the bad guys can go after.
And what's great, you don't have to do it with private lines anymore.
No.
Yeah, I certainly think that, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, the visual that I really get in my head is really kind of thinking about just like a four-lane highway, right, is really just your public internet access. And then Lance, as you pointed out, kind of anybody and their dog really can get access to that. And what we're really talking about here is kind of creating an HOV lane with Jersey barriers on each side that is privatized, that only certain individuals can have access to that particular lane that's there. And from a consumer perspective, you know, as you pointed out, that provides fantastic things, lower latency because there's no traffic. You can get from point A to point B extremely quickly on that. It also provides the additional security. You also have the additional security in terms of just the geographies that you pointed out of saying, okay, this can connect at this point and I'm expecting that message from that particular receiver. And if I don't get it, well, then that's okay. There's an issue there, but I'm not going to accept that message there. So that certainly it makes a lot of sense of why it is that you want kind of a privatized, I guess, kind of say pipeline here to transfer the data from point A to point B. But now, as we know, you know, kind of building an additional lane on a highway, you know, certainly is expensive. So I have to ask your process from on Equinix side. One, is it expensive? And how do you build on this foundation that you've built out?
Ryan, I love your analogy there about the four-lane highway and creating a private lane. Yeah, and if in the old ways of doing things, it would be very expensive to build private connectivity between all the different endpoints. Think about, you know, building private roads. That'd be very expensive. If everywhere you drove, you needed to build a private road. But really, there's been a shift in the last few years to going from a CapEx model to an OpEx-based model, not just for software and licensing of those things, but to infrastructure. Now, the term infrastructure in the payments and banking space often gets a little muddied into including the software. But when I think about infrastructure from an Equinix perspective, I'm thinking about compute, storage, and network. And those things are all becoming capable of being consumed as a service. And Equinix is leading the way in that. In fact, we saw this trend around the need for private connectivity between multiple locations. So we built that what we call Equinix Fabric. And this is a global network that connects all of Equinix's real estate. It's a platform that allows any of our 10,000 customers to quickly turn up private connectivity between themselves. And they pay for it on a per day basis. And they pay by, you know, how much bandwidth they need. They need 100 megs, a gig, 10 gigs. And if they don't need that tomorrow, they can turn it down. That's like being able to build a road and tear it down, but only having the cost of the use of that road for that one day. And so it's the best of infrastructure when it comes to network connectivity, because, you know, previously you'd be roped into a 3 to 5 year contract with one of the big carriers and your partnership may have changed, or, you know, they switched locations. You need to get another circuit and it's going to take you 60 days to turn it up. So this goes a lot along with what Tim talked about with kind of this whole software defined networks and Kubernetes and just being able to be very agile in the infrastructure layer. And we're also seeing that kind of at the hardware layer for compute. Certainly we're familiar with the use of infrastructure as a service by the major cloud service providers, but perhaps there may be a need for you to have better control of being able to point to, this is my box. I want to know this is my box, but I only want this to be my box for these 10 days. Think about a Black Friday or just a surge due to shopping due to coronavirus. But Equinix launched Equinix Metal, which is a bare metal as a service capability. So if you, the beauty of this is if you need to go into a market where you have zero customers and you want to test the waters, you want to show the, you know, it working well in Australia. So you could turn up a box that runs in Australia that is just yours and no one else, you know, it's not shared with anybody else. You could turn up private connectivity between your data center in Silicon Valley or Ashburn, Virginia, just Australia, run the demos and get customers, and you've not spent any CapEx to do this. And we see this really as the trend going forward. So when you talk about, is this expensive? Yeah, it used to be, but today, not as much. It's a lot easier to do.
Do you have the ability to support financial institutions' internal security modules, you know, the hardware security modules and HSM solutions like Thales that they have? Do you operate that within your structure?
Yeah, so there's a few things that really can't be virtualized and put in the public cloud. One of those is payment HSMs.
Okay.
So we do have the capabilities to host the payment HSM for some of the financial institutions or payment processors that goes in their cage. What we're seeing is a beginning of a trend towards payment HSMs as a service. And we have a couple of providers to choose from inside of Equinix at a couple of locations where if you don't want to pay for a payment HSM and want to consume it as a service, you certainly can. So right. If that's something that, you know, somebody that's listening to this wants to know more about, please, you know, reach out to me. I'd be glad to talk to them about it.
So that ability to take CapEx and convert it over and turn it into a function that simply scales with need is recognized as something in the cloud, and most people don't think about it in the network. And being able to do that certainly provides huge opportunities for financial service organizations and others to be able to make their network just as flexible as their cloud-based host systems. Just makes sense.
Yeah, it does. When you release an API now, you hope that it's successful, but why would you build and invest in all the infrastructure you would need it when it scales and it's at peak capacity on day one, when you have no users of it, but you also want the ability to, if it becomes successful, to quickly turn it up so that there's not any user issues with it. You know, I worked at a .com in 2001, and it was a constant effort to buy Dell and HP servers, in advance of the website being saturated with users. And now you don't need to do that. You can use cloud service providers, but you can also use private infrastructure also.
I was in the same situation in the 90s with a company who was basically building that system out, and they had to buy the whole thing. Even the Oracle licenses were killer.
the truth of it is the company that I worked for was in business for 18 months, spent $375 million, went out of business, and I was part of the cleanup crew selling all of these servers at a liquidated price. And, nobody wins in those situations. So, I'm glad to be seeing the future come, to fruition right now. It's a great time to, if you're a developer and you've got a great idea, you can launch in the cloud. You can get it. You can then scale with Equinix, being able to deploy in different markets around the world, and we'll help you with kind of making sure that latency and security and connectivity are all thought out up front. So when you're building that killer API for your fintech or bank, that it'll work properly as you'd like to when it reaches peak.
It's a new world. Nice to see you leading it.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Tim and Ryan.
Yes, so thank you. Absolutely. Thank you so much, Tim and Lance, for taking the time today for speaking to me about APIs and the future of APIs. And I hope to have you both back on the podcast real soon.
Absolutely. Thanks, Ryan.
Thanks, Lance.